On the 24th of October, 1944, planet Earth was following its orbit about the Sun, as it has obediently done for nearly 5 billion years. It moved at the stunning speed of 66,000 miles an hour, and in doing so, created the seasons. In the northern hemisphere, it was a burnished autumn. In the southern, a burgeoning spring. At the same time, the Earth revolved on its axis at a speed of more than 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, turning from west to east, and this produced day and night. As a new day broke over the Philippine Islands, two Navy men, one Japanese, one American, were about to perform acts of such valor that they would be remembered whenever the historic battles of the sea were compared and evaluated. Later, when the ceaseless turning of the earth brought high noon to the island town of Peenemünde on Germany's Baltic coast, a small, quiet, mechanical genius working for Adolf Hitler would find himself in the middle of an ordinary day, which would have a most extraordinary conclusion. A few hours following, when mid-afternoon reached London, a youthful American engineer, not in uniform, would see for himself the power of Hitler's vengeance weapon, the A-4, and would take steps to destroy it, but not its makers, because even then the American government could foresee that when the war ended, they would need these German scientists. And toward the close of that long day, when the Earth had revolved the western region of America into the hours of sunset, in a small city in the state of Fremont, a boy of 17 would experience three resplendent moments and would realize as they were happening that they were special in a way that might never be exceeded. In the early afternoon of that October Tuesday, Stanley Mott, an American civilian, 26 years old, displayed a sense of almost frantic urgency as he watched the radar screen at a tracking station 13 miles south of London. "It's coming," an English sergeant cried, trying vainly to keep the excitement out of his voice. And there on the screen, as Mott watched, the sinister signal showed. A supersonic, unmanned monster bomb coming at London from some undetermined spot in Holland. Even on the radar, it displayed its silent speed, more than 2,000 miles an hour. It would not be heard at this station until some moments after it had passed. Then, sonic booms would thunder through the air, reassuring the listeners that this bomb at least had passed them by. "If you hear it," the sergeant explained to Mott, "it's already gone." In the fragile moments of final silence, everyone in the room listened intently for the tremendous sound which would indicate that the rocket bomb had struck, and sensitive devices were pointed toward London. Crash! The bomb had fallen. The listeners turned antenna to new directions, and soon an ashen-faced young man from Oxford University announced, "The heart of London, but I do believe east of Trafalgar Square." "Hurry," Mott snapped. And within 3 minutes, he and the Oxford man and a driver were speeding toward London with a set of red cards showing on their windshield, allowing them to pass roadblocks and salute policemen who barred certain thoroughfares. "Bomb squad," the Oxford man called as the car sped past. This was not exactly true. He and Mott were not qualified to defuse unexploded bombs, as the real squad did. They collected data on the damage inflicted by these new and terrible bombs, which Hitler was throwing at London in what he boasted was our act of final revenge. From the manner in which confusion grew as the car approached the area leading to Trafalgar Square, it was apparent that the trackers had been correct. The rocket had landed in the vicinity, but well to the east. This was confirmed when Warden shouted, "It landed in the city." Then apprehension doubled. for this meant that the crucial business heart of London, termed the City, was once more in peril. The Bank of England, St. Paul's, the Guildhall, from which Churchill spoke. How Hitler would gloat if his spies wirelessed tonight that one of these enticing targets had been struck. How smug Lord Haw Haw would sound as he ticked off the losses on the midnight radio.